Every necromonger that lives today is a convert.
There'll be no conversions!
We all began as something else. It was hard for me to accept too when I first heard these words, but I changed.
No one here will do what you ask. This is a world of many people, and we simply cannot and will not be converted.
Look, I'm not with everyone here, but I will take a piece of him.
A piece you will have.
Objective Secure Podcast. My name's Mike.
Hi, I'm Emma.
This is episode 44, Cut to the Chase. We're going to be talking about conversions in tabletop wargaming today, not just Games Workshop, but in general.
It's an interesting choice of title, given that we never cut to the chase.
No, but it was the best one I could come up with about cutting and sawing models. And
it's not bad. You know. Just saying, it doesn't really apply to us. But we will try and cut to the chase, because it does have to be a short episode today.
Yeah, it's never going to be a short episode. It's fine.
We'll give it a go.
So we're going to be talking, like I say, about conversions and some of the rules surrounding that for tabletop war games, because there is quite a vast breadth of rules, official and unofficial, from different game systems and then from different organisers.
Mm.
And it can vary at an individual event, as we saw at Show 2019, which is being recorded just after Show.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some...
Which is Southern Hemisphere Open.
Yep. We had some games that we hosted over that weekend which weren't allowed conversions. We had some that were allowed minor ones within very strict guidelines. We had some that were allowed a little bit more leniency, and then we had others where it was almost free-for-all within reason.
Hmm, yeah.
So we thought we'd have a quick chat about that today and cover off some of the variations in the formats and what we do and how we measure whether a conversion's appropriate or not for that sort of for those organized play events and tournaments. But before we sort of start talking about topics, we should cover a few things that have been going on. First of all, yes, we have had Show 2019 come and go.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had an episode in the meantime.
Yep. So the last episode covered a sporadic wrap-up of that part of our year.
Mm-hmm.
We're still kind of wrapping up the last bits and pieces, and we've still got the last invoices coming through now. So
we're going through the evaluation process,
yep,
as well.
Are we doing an exit survey type thing this year as well?
Look, there's a possibility of that. I'm not going to commit to it.
No, I mean, the intent, I think we did it the first year. I don't remember if we did it the second year.
Mm.
But we always try and take on feedback where we can. We've had a lot of good feedback this year, which we've been talking about this morning prior to recording.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to go away and start looking at booking and planning for 2020, because if you don't start now, then it doesn't get done.
No.
It almost didn't get done this year because we got faffed around a bit. So
we pulled it off.
We did. Just. Haven't quite got the house back yet, but
no, we haven't.
We're getting there.
But we do need to get that sorted, because we have got some exciting plans for the next 18 months.
Yeah, so we'll be sharing a lot of those plans with our patrons first. If you want to check out our Patreon page, you can head over to patreon.com/objectivesecured.
Mm-hmm.
And we offer an extra podcast there and early bird tickets for our events and a few other bits and pieces. But we're going to be sharing our plans for the second half of 2019 with our patrons first.
Mm-hmm.
And then offering some exclusive stuff for them. And then we'll be opening it up to the public as well. The plan to release in August at the moment. So all the recordings are getting done in July.
Mm.
Well, you said August because I'm looking at my warlord sat there.
No, I didn't, but that's okay. We'll leave that.
So my warlord is now on the cards to be painted with a priority shift, because I was planning on building and painting some Space Marines, but... the conversation we've had today means that the Titan now gets priority.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as the weather clears up, I'll try and get the next round of undercoats and sprays on him before I bring him inside for the airbrush and try and get some colour on him.
Yes.
Her, it, I'm not really sure yet.
We get to choose that, don't you?
I always called it a her, but that's like cars.
Oh, really? Because I've always heard you call it him a him.
Her.
Hmm.
I'm sure I've alternated back and forth. I'm not... I'm not particularly picky either way.
I guess because it's a warlord makes it feel like a masculine name.
I suppose it does.
Can you have a female warlord?
Absolutely. Well, look,
surely that's a war lady.
Well, no, that's my warlord right there for my new Eldari army. That's Yvraine. So, and it's most definitely a woman. So, not picky. Happy to have either.
Really doesn't matter. And we're not really cutting to the chase.
No. It's called procrastination. It's fine.
Yes.
We have had the new contrast paints released over the weekend, just gone.
Mm-hmm.
I pre-ordered a bunch and still haven't got them, but I had to go out to one
Which is really frustrating.
It is a bit, because I shouldn't have pre-ordered. I should have just picked them up from the store when I was out there yesterday.
I think, why bother pre-ordering if you could have got them sooner by going to the store?
Yeah. I mean, in the past, when you've done pre-orders, they've shipped them kind of in the lead-up to the actual release weekend, and you tended to either get them on the Friday just before release or on the Monday after release. But now they don't ship them until the Monday after release, which means I'm not going to get them for at least another 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Which is actually a little bit frustrating, to be honest.
It is, really.
And the problem is, of course, when you do pre-orders in stores, which is what I did, I try and help out the stores by doing it in store, because that way it helps their numbers for sales. Because I could just do it from home at that point. So the convenience of, if I'm going to pre-order, I might as well just do it from home at that point, which is a bit frustrating. But I did pick up the black, which was out of stock on the web store when I went to do my pre-order in store. So I was fortunate enough to grab one of those along with the new Corvus Black and Korax White base colours, which they've made no mention of whatsoever in all the release notes. They've talked about the contrast colours, and they've talked about the two new spray paints and the matching pots for those colours.
Yeah.
But then they've snuck out a whole range of other stuff that just seems to have been glossed over. Like, there's the contrast mediums, the technicals have had a bit of a shuffle. We've got, like I say, Corvus Black, which is more of a blue black. It's a warm black, maybe is the best way to describe it. So it'll be interesting to see how that compares to the black Chaos. So Chaos Black from this spray can and a Baden Black from the pot. So we've now got three different blacks, none of which match, which is a bit frustrating. But they have gotten rid of Ceramite White and replaced it with Korax White. Ceramite White was the base colour, which was terrible. And I've had many a Games Workshop employee tell me that that's a terrible colour. This is the one that's meant to match the Korax White spray.
Yeah.
So whether it does or it doesn't, I'll find out very shortly when I start spraying it.
Did they get rid of the blue?
Which blue?
Oh, was it ultramarine blue that they were getting rid of, or rumoured to be getting rid of?
They are killing off, a couple of the canned sprays. So
no, this was pots. The only reason that I...
Oh, Gilliman blue is the one you're talking about. Okay. There's a range of glazes that are being discontinued. One of them is Gilliman or ultramarine blue, essentially. And they are slowly being weaned out of range.
Some people going out and literally emptying the shelf of them because they're so worried about them going out of stock.
Well, and when you're halfway through an army, I completely get that. That's one of the reasons I've got a bunch of armies I can't really update anymore, because I don't have the matching colours. Because then you get units that look different. And to be fair, part of that's also to do with your changing style as an artist.
Painting skill either.
Yeah.
You know, getting better because you've practiced more, or
diminishing through age.
Yeah. Hand and your eye aren't what they were 10 years ago.
Yeah. So I get this, the nature of, if that's, I saw a photo of a guy who bought like 30 of those Gilliman blue glazes and then put them in like a 600 mil.
Yeah, I'm not sure why you'd put them in a 600 mil pot.
No, I'd rather leave those pots sealed.
Yeah, exactly.
Because as soon as you pop them, you break the airtight seal, you've got between 3 and 6 months of use, best case. And a water bottle's not going to prevent them from evaporating. It's just going to mess with the pigment ratios because of the volume.
Yeah. I thought it was an interesting choice anyway.
Yeah. So it's... it'll be Gilliman Blue is the one you're thinking of, because Waywatcher Green and a few of the other glazes are all being discontinued. And the coloured sprays as well. So I went and bought a can of Dark Angels... What's it called now? Caliban Green, I think it is. Yeah, it is. For our son who's painting his salamanders, because he uses that as an undercoat instead of black, because it starts him off as a dark green rather than a black for his green salamanders. That's being discontinued. And the rattle can I had, I went, there's probably enough for one more squad in it from the feel of it. Went and bought the brand new can, opened up the old can to put a spray down, and got halfway through five marines before it ran out.
Yeah.
So
I can find that kind of frustrating, actually.
We discontinued the coloured sprays.
Yeah.
They've done it to me more times than I can remember.
Just discontinuing the colour ranges.
A lot of the time it's due to licensing. So their first range of paints was done by Côte d'Armes, which still produce the original Citadel pots, that they're no longer Citadel anymore. They're still available if you go through to Côte d'Armes. But the licensing agreements expire. So then they change production. So at least that's the... I know that that was the relationship past when Côte d'Armes were producing them. So I'm assuming that that's... You know, if you've got a spray paint producer that's producing these colours for you and then the agreement expires, then that would make a lot of sense. Hmm. Doesn't help the hobbyists, but...
No, it doesn't.
I'm half considering buying one more can of it just to be sure for him because that first can did the first 1,000 points. Or no, it didn't actually because I've still got half a dozen models plus the half that are half undercoated to do. Yeah. So one more can would probably cover him for the army. But and spinning off topic because we're not going to cut the chase. I saw someone on Facebook over the weekend saying, where do I get the cheapest spray paint in Australia for my models? Because I don't want to pay $30 for a spray can. And it's 30 bucks Oz for a GW can.
Okay. Just be careful, because I could get on a soapbox.
Well, I'm going to get on it for you, because okay, my awesome. Response to that was, so hang on a minute, you've just bought a $100 box of Space Marines, yeah. and you're trying to go and spend $2 or $3 on cheap enamel spray paint at Bunnings as an undercoat.
Or any hardware store.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah. This was the links were all referring to an Australian hardware store called Bunnings.
But actually, spray paint at Bunnings isn't $2 or $3 anymore.
No.
You know, when I worked in a paint section, which was, you know, close to two decades
yeah,
ago.
20 years ago, yeah.
Actually, it was only 16. But anyway, you know, when I worked there, yeah, we were selling spray paint for $3 a can, but it's not anymore.
No, it's between $9 and $12 minimum.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You're looking at about $12, $13 for a can of spray paint now. And what is it, $20 for the GW stuff? $30. Oh, wow, that's gone up, actually. Yeah.
It was $20 back... when you were paying, you know, $3 or $4 for a can. Mm. So in terms of inflation, it hasn't gone up too much. But no, you pay $30 for a can of, or is it $28? It's one of the two.
Yeah, it's close enough.
You know, you're going to go and buy, most of the ones recommend White Knights, Squirts or Rust-Oleum.
Well, the Rust-Oleum one is about $20 a can.
Yeah, and we use that for the Rust-Oleum flat enamel water-based one. Mm. We use for
Terrain. And I use it to paint plant pots.
Yeah. and it's the closest one we can find to a water-based... It's still an enamel, but it's at least water-based. Mm. It just baffles me that you go and spend hundreds of dollars on miniatures...
To potentially to then ruin them. Your finish.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
I don't know. Like, it's one of those weird paradoxes in the hobby where, you know, the guys who are going out and buying brand new kits on release and then going down to their hardware store to get the cheapest possible spray paint they can to undercoat them. Just, it's a weird paradox for me.
I get that spray paint is spray paint, but it's actually not.
No.
They are different and they have different consistencies and they have different finishes. And if you try and paint over a gloss finish for your spray paint, it's not nice. But if you're looking at something like a tape measure, sure, go to your cheapest hardware store and pick up, or you know, your $2 shop and pick up a $2 or $5 tape measure as opposed to buying a GW branded one. Although you could get an Obsec branded one, which is totally worth the $5. but you know, like, you don't need to super glue, but yeah, I guess when it comes to like PVA glue is PVA glue and tape measures are tape measures, providing you check to make sure your centimeters or inches are on there. Don't buy a centimeter measure if your game system works in inches. But for something like spray paint, it does actually directly affect the finish of your model.
Mm.
You've paid a lot of money for it and you're going to scrimp. Like, okay, $30 for a can, I do find actually really expensive.
But
how many models does it take?
Well, that's what I was about to say. To put that in comparison, the can that I've just half used for Lachlan's Salamanders, because I'd actually used part of it because it was a leftover can from my Green Dark Elder.
Yeah.
I painted probably 35 Space Marines, and it was about half full before it ran out. So if you bought two cans, $60, you'd easily do 100 infantry plus support vehicles. Like without even struggling for that. So you're paying $60, but you'd easily do 100 plus models with them. So I get that you go, oh, but $3 or $6 or $10 a can and I can still do the same thing because obviously volume is volume. Yeah. But the finish on that is, when you actually break it down...
When you're paying less than a dollar for the spray paint per model, you know, 50 cents per model for the spray paint, and yet like the how much are the Citadel paint pots now?
$6. The big one, like the contrast, like $11 each Australian.
Mm.
So it does make me sort of go, I don't get it.
But this is the same argument that we have around people who have got thousands and thousands of dollars worth of models, but don't think that they should have to pay a decent price to come to an event because it's not worth it and it's a rip-off.
Mm.
So, you know, you're more than happy to drop, I don't know, $2,000 on an army plus paint plus glue.
Well, good friend of ours who games with me regularly and, you know, all the rest of it, he bought the entire contrast range over the counter, including the spray paints, retail at Games Workshop over the weekend.
Mm.
600 and something Australian dollars.
Yeah.
Now, he's one who doesn't quibble about events. He just goes, yep, happy to come and play, yeah, happy to come and pay, not a problem.
And he's most likely not going to be using the cheapest spray paint from Bunnings to
No, that. He doesn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he then complained at me, I'd tell him to pull his head in because it's a really weird paradox for me. If you're going to spend all this money on these high detail models and then cover them with an enamel spray paint
that potentially clogs up all of those details.
Or even worse, in my opinion, see, a lot of people want to go for those ones because there is a primer version of them. The problem with the primer version of those paints, in my opinion, because it is only my opinion, primers...
Well done. Look, you're learning.
Primers innately fill in gaps. They're designed to make a smooth surface. Mm. So first thing they do is going to fill in any fine details if you spray too much of them. But second of all, you can't get the damn things off because they bond with the plastic.
So if you want to strip them later...
It actually becomes really awkward. And the plastic, as it stands, is already porous. So spraying them with a Games Workshop can is still going to... Like, if you spray a model Caliban green, like I've been doing with our son's Space Marines, if I put them in paint stripper, they're only going to ever go back to Caliban green because that'll soak into the plastic. It'll be absorbed in plastic, slightly porous.
Yeah, but then you do have the option just spray over you it. Can spray white over them if you want to go with
or black or whatever.
Colour.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But it's what I'm saying is if you want to paint a dark colour, then the green isn't going to be an issue, but you can spray over with white in order to...
But if you tried and spray after stripping an enamel spray... You're never going to be able to get that off because it'll bond with the plastic, and then the only way to get it off is acetone, basically.
Which melts your plastic
model. Is going to kill your plastic model. So, yeah, I don't know. I find it quite baffling that people are willing to scrimp on those sorts of things, given the hobby that we're in.
Mm.
Anyway, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come back and we'll talk about conversions and some of the different game systems and how they apply those conversion rules, and talk about how we handle them for our events.
Let's go.
Okay, so let's talk conversions and you and me and how that affects... I suppose we're going to talk mostly about organised play.
Yeah.
However, we should preface this.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that we need to start by saying that this is your game, your models. If you're playing at home in your game room with, you know, a friend, what you do to your models is totally up to you.
Yeah, what you guys agree on and decide is cool and not cool is totally on you for any of these games.
Yeah.
We're coming at it from an organizer's point of view, and so inevitably that leads to guidelines and rules being put in place by the different companies and by organizers to make sure that everyone's got an even playing field.
Yeah, and I will say that, you know, going back, probably more than a decade now, but you had a friend who used to come and game here, and he would sometimes play with, print out the models on a piece of paper and stick them to a 5-cent piece while he was trying to work out what army he wanted to buy, that kind of thing. So, you know, we've seen the whole spectrum of conversions, and that's okay because it was two mates hanging out playing a game together.
Yeah, absolutely. Proxy models as well throw into that mix where you go, oh, cool, so this... the most common one, of course, is this Coke bottle is a drop pod from many years ago before the drop pod model came out. That is a long time ago now.
It is a long time ago, yeah.
You know, ultimately, all the stuff we're going to talk about in a second comes down to going to an event, whether it's a narrative or matched play or organized play, whatever you choose to call it, something that's organized outside of you and your immediate circle. So you're paying to go and play at an event someone else has organized. and there tends to be rules about what you can and can't do.
Yeah, and it comes down to where your priorities in gaming are. Like, we had someone who contacted us prior to show to say, hey, I've got these models, I'm thinking, I'm, you know, doing this passion project, well, I want to put them on, I think it was 32mm bases. Are they going to be okay to play with at show? And we went through a whole heap of conversation around that. And his response was ultimately, I'm putting them on 32mm bases anyway, because that's what I think is going to be best for this particular army. It's just whether or not I'm allowed to bring them out to play.
Yeah.
And because for him, the biggest goal for him was about creating this army in the way that was aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
Whereas for other people, it's, I want to make the most out of these in an event. How can I make sure that I can do this conversion that I want to do legally so that I'm still going to be able to put it on the table?
Yeah, look, and I mean, I've got units that I'm just as guilty of for changing base sizes and that sort of thing because they either don't fit or they never look
too top heavy and they fall over.
Yeah, they never looked right or whatever it happens to be. And anything that's outside of the norm, the safest bet is always going to be to speak to the organizer.
Yeah. Which is difficult when there's multiple organizers.
Yeah. Most of the time, I found most organizers are pretty agreeable to it as long as you're not looking to gain some sort of advantage unnecessarily. And that kind of, the whole base size thing ties into conversions to some degree because there's plenty of times where you see people trying to make this cool model, it needs to go on a bigger base. Mm. And all of a sudden, that can change the way it affects the game. And
But really, what I was trying to say was if you're the former person that I was talking about who really what they're interested in is converting this model to make it into a cool model because in their head they can see that it would look this way and that's awesome, then you go for it. And this is probably not the episode that's relevant for you. We'd love to see photos of what you do.
Yeah.
But it's not going to affect you.
And your hobby.
And your hobby, because this is really relevant only to organized events and organized play.
Yeah. We might as well talk very quickly about bases in organized play, which is a contentious topic all of its own, for one game system anyway.
Oh, it's a really long subject. I shouldn't have talked about bases. I just thought it was an easy example that popped into my head.
So let's start with something like X-Wing.
Are we talking about bases?
Yeah, we're going to talk about bases first.
Okay.
So I think I've got the latest version of the organized play pack here in front of me, but basically it says players cannot modify their ship bases to alter their size or shape. Weight may be included on a ship base if it does not alter the shape of the base. Ship pegs, including the connecting pegs affixed to the ship models, may be modified or replaced with a different connecting method. So basically,
that's pretty standard for most systems, isn't it? I mean, War Machine says something similar, the detail of saying that it must be a round-lipped base.
Yeah, look, Privateer Press's Steamroller, I'm looking at 2018 Steamroller here at the moment, because the 2019 one doesn't come out for about another 3 weeks or so. Models must be mounted on appropriately sized round-lipped bases, which is the Malifaux War Machine style. Mm-hmm. Added scenic details can overhang the model's edge, but must not obscure the edge in a way that makes accurate measuring during a game difficult or impossible. I actually quite like that clause because it means that you...
Yeah, I do too.
You remove some of the inconsistencies with measuring with some of the other games. So, you know, X-Wing and War Machine are probably two of the most stringent in their modification rules. I know that Age of Sigmar has an entire document that tells you what bases everything should be on now, which is great. It has done for some time.
It is great, except does it then, what happens when they release new models in 5 years' time and they're on a different size base?
Well, I'm assuming they'll update that pack because that's what everyone's been using now for a couple of years. It might even be in the General's Handbook that they update every year.
Is that the one that it's got multiple sizes? So if you're using this one, then these are the three sizes that you can use.
No, that was one that, that's for 40K for the
ETC.
That's
what I thought.
The elephant in the room is the 40K system, which has... no rules in the rulebook to cover what bases anything should be on. No, you must use the bases it came with or anything. It's just got no... It says the game assumes you're using the bases the model came with, but that's it. It doesn't tell you the Terminators that I bought back in 1995, they're on 25mm bases. The current ones are on 40mm bases. Hmm. Like, the game assumes I'm using it what I bought them on. Cool. Well, that changes the game significantly at that point.
Hmm.
There's no... formal basing chart or anything for 40K. It feels like there's a big glaring omission.
It's been quite difficult for us for events because I'm trying to think who it was who wanted to bring an AOS army And, well, firstly, there was the, do I have to rebase them from square to round? But then they're all on, you know, the wrong size base. Do I have to rebase them in order to come and play?
Yeah.
Like, another, there are a lot of barriers to entry for formal events. And I feel like bases quite often add another barrier to entry.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
In terms of 40K, the general rule we have is we assume that you're going to be using the base size of the current model, not the one from 20 years ago. Mm. Most of the time, going up a size or down, like, you'd almost never go down a size. I can't see a reason. Unless you're, if you're going down a size, I suspect you're actually looking for an advantage at that point.
Well, that's what I was just thinking. I can certainly see the advantage in playing on the 25 mil bases that you had from 1989 compared to the 40 mil bases.
But rocking up with a current plastic Terminator that fits on a 40 on a 25.
Yeah, it's going to make it tricky for it to
that's, be balanced. That's clear. Well, that's also clearly you're trying to gain an advantage at that point.
Mm. Maybe you think it looks better.
You wouldn't even get both their feet on that base. So if you were doing it, you'd be modelling this big rocky thing for them to stand on, and it'd top heavy and be very weird. In any case, I see it quite commonly with people going with their... I'll use a personal example. When I do my X-Arcs for my Aspect Warrior squads, the Aspects are meant to be on 25mm bases, and I put the X-Arcs on 32s because they're that little bit bigger. They've got two wounds, not one. They tend to be just a bigger model. Mm. So they fit nicer. It also makes them really easy to spot in the squad. Now, that 1 7mm change on that base technically makes that X-Arc illegal. So whenever I've done it, I've always gone to the TO and said, hey, this is what I've done. Are you okay with that? No one's
and
ever
said... And you do that before list submission is due.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not the morning of the event.
No. And I've never had anyone say no to it. The biggest issue with 40K comes from most anything that generates some sort of aura or thing you measure from their bases. Yeah. And a lot of people don't grasp the difference, because if you've got a 25mm base and you've got a 6-inch aura and you go to a 40mm base with a 6-inch aura, people go, well, you've still only got a 6-inch aura. Mm. That's not how the area of a circle works, because you've just changed the radius significantly, which means that the area of that circle has changed significantly. And when you actually do the maths on it, there is a significant change because the radius of the circle has changed.
Okay. So, just explain that.
Okay. So, I have a 6-inch aura.
Yes.
My base is 25 mils.
Yes.
So, it's 12.5 mils plus 6 inches of radius. Correct?
Hang on. No, I've lost you.
Okay. So, the circle
I'm paying attention for a second. I'm sorry. I'm with you now.
Okay. So, I've got a 6-inch radius, which is, we'll use centimetres to make it easy.
A 6-inch radius.
Yep. 6-inch aura. So it's 6 inches from the edge of my base.
Okay.
It's 15 centimetres. I'm going to put it all in centimetres for you.
No, that's fine. It's just that a 6-inch aura, I would have imagined, was a 6-inch diameter, not a 6-inch radius.
6-inch radius. 6 inches from the base. So.
6 inches from the edge of the base?
From the edge of the base.
6 inches from the centre
of
the base?
No, it's always measured to the edge. The rules are very clear. It says measure to the edge.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I'm with you now. I get it.
Yeah. So basically what you're doing is, even though that change is going from 12.5 mils of radius to 20 mils of radius, that 7.5 mils actually affects the entire area of the circle. So in terms of square centimetres, you get a significantly bigger area even once you take out the base at the centre of it, which is obviously occupied by the model that's generating the aura. And it only gets worse as you go up in scale. So if you go from a 40 mil character base to a dreadnought 60 mil base, it gets even worse and worse and worse. And people go, oh, but most that's never going to come into play. And look, they're probably right. Most of the time, that total change in area is never going to be a significant thing, because the only time it'll ever come into play if you have to pack models around the character, because obviously you will innately be able to pack more around the character. But most auras aren't measured to model. They're measured to units. So you only need one model in range to get the effect most of the time. Mm. So changing the aura of a model by 7.5 millimeters is almost never going to have an impact. Where it does have an impact on base size is to do with things like denying tactical reserves, because you're not allowed to deploy within 9 inches of an enemy unit. So if you've got 5 models on 25 mil bases spaced 2 inches apart, compared to 5 models on 32 mil bases spaced 2 inches apart, you actually significantly lengthen the space. And that's where people get upset with base sizes.
Having said that, there is the flip side to it as well, where there's a detrimental effect to having the bigger base size.
Yep, which can often make it harder to get models on or in cover. It makes them harder to get out of line of sight because you can't overlap bases.
You can't get as many models next to each other as possible.
When you're deploying from tactical reserves, you can also have struggle to get models into the space because their bases are bigger, which is one of the reasons you'd go on a smaller base for a Terminator squad. You're deploying them from reserve. If they're on 25mm bases, they'll fit in spaces that the 40s won't.
So I guess when we have looked at this, we've had a discussion around, well, what are the benefits for you having a bigger size base and what are the negatives for you having a bigger base size? Do they actually negate each other in order for that to be okay and to allow people to bring the different size base? And generally, we have done.
Yeah, it's normally not an issue. And the couple of times where people have brought one of our Albany attendees, he did a conversion of, what's his name?
The
Space Wolf, Bjorn the Fellhanded from Space Wolves.
Okay.
He did a Redemptor version of that. Now, the Redemptor comes on an 80mm base. The standard Beyond the Fellhanded comes on a 60mm base.
Mm-hmm.
He went, I've done this awesome conversion. I play with it at home. I want to use it at First Blood. I went, well, First Blood is the tournament to use it at because it's a hobby event. I'm going to make you take an inch off of his aura. So instead of his 6-inch aura, he's now only got a 5-inch aura. Mm-hmm. Is that okay with you? And Mark went, yeah, completely fine. Because he wanted to use his core model.
Yeah.
And that way the aura was actually smaller than it should have been based on that change. It should have only been a 1/2-inch knockoff. Mm. He was bigger for line of sight purposes, which was good for him, but also bad for him because it was harder to hide. And for that event, it was a hobby event.
Yeah.
So him coming along with that core model that he'd converted up and spent all that time on, it was an appropriate time for him to do that. Now, I did say to him at the time, if you'd asked me for Masters or for WATC, I'd probably say no. Because the change is significant, which is kind of what we're going to talk about now for conversions, because we're going to move away from bases.
Which we weren't supposed to be talking about.
No.
But somebody sort of accidentally mentioned them, and here we are.
So, conversions. What is a conversion specifically? Conversion is taking an existing model and making it your own through generally...
Hacking.
Well, it's generally some sort of modification. Now, most people don't classify a kit bash as a conversion. It totally is.
Yeah.
Because you're not building the model the way it was intended. Now, whether that's with third-party components or whether that's with another kit from the same range or something completely unrelated from the same range, you're still turning something into something else.
Mm.
And that's as much a conversion as the traditional ones where you take a hobby saw and a knife and green stuff and glue and sculpt and mess about with things and do something really extravagant.
I will just add that to remember that that kit bashing counts as conversions, because when we go around and do the paint scoring at events and I ask people, are there any conversions? Often people will go, oh, no. And then someone will go, oh, well, what about those guns don't look like, those weapons aren't the ones that they come with. Oh, yeah, no, I did change the weapons and the heads. And
yeah.
Like, well, okay, so which bit of it actually came in the kit that you bought?
The legs.
The legs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, you didn't sculpt it yourself out of green stuff, but it's still a conversion because you converted it from the original to be something different.
Yeah. And, you know, weapon swaps and those sort of additional, like, pistol pouches and all that sort of stuff all count.
They're not going to get you as many points as if you do the, you know, green stuff work on every model.
It depends on how many models you do it on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's important.
That's it. Swap one weapon and you're probably not going to get full points.
But do it across the entire army.
Yeah.
And that's another matter entirely. Now, so when we start talking about, we'll go back to X-Wing, because X-Wing has a really simple set of, they're pre-painted models.
Mm-hmm.
They have one line. It says, players may paint their ship models, full stop. Pretty self-explanatory. They cannot modify a ship model in any way that would create confusion about which ship the model represents, full stop. That's literally their entire thing on converting their models for X-Wing.
But really, I think that it just needs to be that simple for that, to me, encapsulates what it is for every system that's out there.
Yeah, I think where it starts getting, when you combine that with them modifying and altering base sizes, it means that their game is consistent. Because if it's an X-Wing, it goes on the small base ship. It doesn't matter how high the peg is because the peg has no relevance in the game. And as long as you don't modify that that TIE fighter to look like a TIE interceptor or a TIE advanced or something else, as long as you can clearly tell it's a TIE fighter, it's TIE Fighter.
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's exactly what it is in every game system that I've ever come across. Your model needs to accurately represent the model what that it's is. Supposed to be on the table.
Yeah.
And we talk about silhouettes and sizes and that kind of thing, but really it is that simple. The model needs to look like what you're saying it is.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely...
I'm hearing yes, but the tone that you're saying it in is telling me no.
I don't think it's that simple for most miniature games. The reason it
really?
The reason yeah, it works simple. For X-Wing is the models are pre-built, pre-painted, and very fixed in what they are.
Yeah. So tell me why it's more complicated in other systems. Because okay. for me, it feels that simple.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the Steamroller Pack for War Machine.
Yep.
So, cannot be converted in any way that any part of the model represents the intellectual property of any party except Privateer Press, including logos, symbols, elements, and other iconography. Okay. So, that means you can't put an Ultramarines logo on a Signar Warjack.
Yeah, but if you're playing in War Machine, you wouldn't. For me, I read that as...
I counter that and tell you that there is a guy who, in Perth who plays Age of Sigmar who has Ferrari transfers
yes, but that's
on his
different.
Vehicle.
No, that's exactly what I was about to say. You wouldn't put an Ultramarines logo on something, but putting a Ferrari logo on a tank, probably not a tank,
it's
but,
a
you know...
tank.
Okay, then a tank. Or putting... You know, putting
but that falls under
putting
this.
Nike logos on their boots or something like that.
I've seen that as well.
Yeah, so that I can understand the intellectual property that way. I can't see that anyone will put a GW intellectual property on War Machine because why would you? You've moved away from GW and into playing Privateer Press.
Maybe you put the Salamander's dragon, the symbol of the Salamander's Legion, because it's a cool dragon, on the shoulder pads of a Warjack. Technically, that's against what they're talking
I'm
about.
I'm not sure that this is really what we should be talking about anyway, for conversion.
The majority of the converted models' volume must be composed of parts from Privateer Press models. To avoid confusion, the conversion should include iconic elements of the model it is intended to represent.
Which goes back to the silhouette needs to be.
Well, see, this doesn't talk about. See, this doesn't talk about silhouette. Though.
It doesn't talk about silhouette. No, but I'm reading that the same way. It should be iconic.
Yeah. So
you need.
If it has a certain style of weapon, but because they're multi-part kits, you can obviously pose them however you like, is the trick. So the silhouette's a bit of a misleading word in that regard.
Well,
whereas Infinity does use silhouettes.
Well, going back to what it says in X-Wing, the model has to represent what it is.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what Privateer Press is saying. It needs to represent what it is.
Well, it also tells you
that iconic element.
But it also tells you it has to be mostly Privateer Press parts.
Yeah.
A weapon on a model must may be converted as long as the conversion represents the same type of weapon, e.g. an axe is still an axe, not a hammer. The weapon can be completely swapped for another weapon as long as the new weapon is of the same type, e.g. an axe for an axe, a rifle for a rifle. The weapon cannot be removed unless it is replaced by another weapon. Conversely, a weapon cannot be added unless it replaces a weapon that was removed. If a conversion uses a Privateer Press upgrade kit for the model it is intended to represent, all parts of the upgrade kit must be clearly visible on the model. Which means that if you've got a Warjack you're upgrading and you like the head but don't like the one of the weapons, you don't get a choice. You have to use the whole conversion kit because there's a bunch of the plastic Warjacks that get upgraded with metal components to make them a different Warjack.
Okay.
Models must be mounted on the base, which we've talked about.
What about if you didn't like the head so you had your model standing on the other person's head and kept that head on? It's on there.
I suppose technically that meets the requirement. Where is it? Must be clearly visible on the model. Yeah, I suppose so. A player cannot use a model as a proxy stand-in for another model, which is, again, something that we do. Although we do allow it in certain circumstances, which I'll talk about in a second.
But again, I think it goes back to it needs to look like what it
says. Yeah, if you want to run a Griffin Light Warjack, it needs to be a Griffin Light Warjack, not another Light Warjack from something else. And the last step is any conversions must be clearly pointed out to the opponent before the game, and the end result of any conversion must be clearly identifiable as the intended model. Which comes back to your original point, where it should look like what it should look like.
It should, yeah, but any conversions need to be pointed out to
yeah,
your
so
opponent.
In War Machine that works because the model count's a lot lower,
yeah.
And most of the conversions are going to be reposes rather than like full-blown...
So what do you think... What do you think the benefits are from having a conversion that you could be hiding from your opponent? potentially, or that your opponent may not
know
about.
Again, it'd come down to things like those misleading stuff where if you've got a particular war jack that's an upgrade kit for a standard jack and you don't put the head on it, for example, but you put the arms on it, then your opponent goes, oh, yeah, that's a...
Yeah.
That's a Phoenix, but it's not a Phoenix, it's a Banshee or something else. Then that could be an issue.
I can just see that taking a really long time. It could go through all the conversions.
But we don't see a lot of conversions at the War Machine events locally. It's very few and far between. Mm. If they are, they're reposes, not what I would consider to be conversions that I see at 40K events.
Having said that, a repose is still a conversion.
It is. This also gives illegal and legal examples of how to actually do conversions. And there's one here I want to point out. The player converts his entire army to resemble his favourite superheroes, including trademarked logos. This army is illegal.
This is the first time I've seen this, that the whole way through this, it says his. Oh, no, it doesn't. A player, her army.
Yep.
Ah, so they swap.
They do swap back and forth. Player creates an extreme behemoth by scratch building the entire model out of sculpting putty except for the behemoth bombard parts. Because the majority of this model's volume is not composed of privateer press models, this model is an illegal conversion. So you can't even scratch build in this. You have to use the majority of the genuine parts.
Yeah.
And it goes through and gives a whole bunch of those examples of illegal and legal ones.
So legally, you can paint your models to look like your favourite sporting team, providing you don't put the logo on it.
Yeah, it actually says that.
If you put the logo on, then it becomes illegal.
Paint schemes are not conversions is what they've commented in that space. So you can paint the colours, but not the logos.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it goes through and actually it's quite an interesting sort of spiel of examples, and some of them, I'm not going to read them all, but some of them, because they reference models that some listeners might not be familiar with. But it is a really well laid out. There's no pictures, sadly. I'd love to have seen some pictures to go with it, but in terms of most of the War Machine guys, no one's ever had a problem with it. No. That I've ever spoken to. So that works quite well. Now, at the other end of the field, we have Games Workshop. Now, the first one that I'll talk about is Underworlds, because we've run two Grand Clashes now, and we don't write the players pack for the Grand Clash.
No.
We get that given to us by Games Workshop once we get the approval to run one.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a section in here on page, I don't even know what page I'm on, 6, I think it is, called Miniatures. Players may only use official Warhammer Underworld Citadel miniatures in Warhammer Underworlds tournament, and all miniatures must be fully assembled. Players must use the appropriate miniatures for their warband. Pictured on the fighter cards. Minor conversions, e.g. modifications to the miniatures to personalise them, may be permitted or even encouraged by the organiser's discretion, but must still allow for easy identification of the fighter represented by the miniature. If a conversion is deemed to be misleading by the organiser, or if a miniature is damaged or assembled in such a way it cannot be easily identified, the player will not be allowed to use that miniature, and they must use an acceptable version of that miniature or forfeit their games until they are able to secure an acceptable version of that miniature. And then it also makes mention that if you're playing someone else that has the same warband, you have to be able to tell the two warbands apart.
Yeah.
And the best way to do that is to paint them. Mm-hmm. So,
or write your name on the base.
Yeah. So, we actually had this happen for the Grand Clash this year where a player went, hey, I want to use this particular Squig model because I like it better than the Squig model that came in the warband.
So, his warband only had one Squig model
in
it.
That's all it can have.
Yeah, yeah. So, I'm just trying to put some context in it. So, it only had one Squig model in it, but he didn't like the one that it came with.
No.
However, Age of Sigma has multiple options, and he wanted to use one of the other options, which was still very, very clearly a squig model.
Oh, yeah, it was literally a squig model. It was just a different type of squig.
Yeah.
Still a big ball of teeth with feet, basically.
And it was a much nicer model.
It is a core model. And he did the same with, he wanted to change the one of the ball and chain fanatics as well. Again, because he liked the plastic one from the main range as opposed to the warband one. And in both cases, I had to point to this and say no. Because this is an event that's run as an official event, we have to abide by the official rulings. And I said to him, you have to make sure you've got the correct models. That was kind of the end of the... Unfortunately, that was the end of the conversation. Now,
well, we did... Yeah.
We did
have a lot of conversation around it and tried to find ways.
We actually even went back to Games Workshop and asked for clarity on it because they were still Underworlds... Age of Sigmar miniatures.
Yeah.
But
they're not Underworlds miniatures.
They're not Underworlds miniatures. So... It's whereas we've also had players, one of our locals, Adrian, he has a Khorne warband that he has put flowers on them and painted pink flowers on them, and instead of the bloody red Khorne guys, But they're all still very clearly the miniatures
that they came
with. Yeah. So even though they're converted and they might not be to everyone's tastes, they are still easily identified as the miniatures on the cards, which meets the criteria.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting one because obviously as you start delving into Games Workshop, getting involved in organized play, these sorts of clauses are likely to come about as they, if they delve into bigger game systems, then we could start seeing these requirements of only Games Workshop miniatures, no third party stuff, that sort of thing. So it's going to be interesting because I think this is a testbed for that. I don't know what was in the Kill Team pack. Do you remember?
No.
Well, you can talk for a second and I'll look that up.
Okay. I think that it's useful having these clauses in here that have been defined by the organisations that have created the games. So having those in there from X-Wing and from Privateer Press and obviously from Games Workshop now with this one does make it really black and white, which makes it easier for tournament organisers.
I think it adds some weight as well. I think players are less likely to argue when there's the gravitas attached to it.
From the people who wrote it rather than, you know, the tournament organisers who are having to make judgments. And it's difficult for us as well to, you know, to have to be the people making that judgment because I agreed with that particular player that, yeah, that other model is, you know, it does look cooler. It does exactly the same thing. It doesn't actually impact the game in any way, shape or form for him to have that one on the table instead of the one that the Warband came with.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we would have okayed it. It's just that, obviously, it was really clearly spelled out. And, you know, whether or not it was intended to be clearly spelled out for that particular, you know, for that example, because, you know, there's only one squig in that warband and you could clearly tell what it was. It still matched the card to some extent.
And I don't think anyone would actually complain. Like any of his opponents. Look, I don't think anyone would whinge.
However, if, for example, you were playing with squigs, but you wanted to instead use one of the 40K models that's...
Yeah.
You know, or, yeah, I don't know. Then I guess it's not as clearly identified. So you want to use... Then it becomes proxy models, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I've got the Kill Team pack here, which is, again, written by Games Workshop for us. Miniatures. Each model must be painted and must completely and accurately represent its entry on your army roster, including all war gear. In cases where it is disputed, an official will judge whether or not a model can be considered painted. Conversions are acceptable, but must still represent the model, what the model is armed with. If a conversion is deemed to be misleading by the organizer, or if a miniature is damaged or assembled in such a way that it cannot easily be identified, the player will not be allowed to use that miniature. If the player is unable to field a battle forged kill team as a result, e.g. the damaged model is the model's only leader, the player's only leader, then that player must forfeit the games until they can provide an alternate substitute. Players cannot handle their opponent's miniatures. A player must can waive this rule for their own miniatures if they wish and should indicate to their opponent when this is the case. So we've got a very similar set of clause there that's almost a copy-paste out of the Underworlds one.
Oh,
it
no.
doesn't say you have to use the official Games Workshop miniatures.
It doesn't say you have to use the official Kill Team miniatures.
Well, there aren't official Kill Team miniatures. They're all 40K miniatures.
Oh, I thought that when you got the... No.
They're literally just repacks of the Games Workshop kits. So it doesn't actually actually require GW miniatures, which is another interesting thing, which I assumed it would.
And I would think that they've gone with the assumption as well.
Probably. So it's interesting that this one doesn't feature that, though. So when we talk about what we put in for conversions, I'm going to open the 40K one that we did for singles on... Day two of show, because this is a this has been in the pack for a little while now, and it gets fine tuned and tweaked periodically as I find holes in it and people find holes in it for me.
And it is about to get a whole overhaul.
Yeah, we're going to do a mass overhaul for the players pack shortly. So first of all, I want to talk about the proxy comment that we made earlier. There's a section in here that says, Forge all models conforming to the correct base size and general shape may be used to represent entries from the relevant army list, i.e. Death Corps of Krieg and Astromil and Tyrant Guard using the Codex rules. Note, this doesn't allow you to circumvent WYSIWYG. So what I mean by that is, if you've got a Death Corps of Krieg army with Death Corps of Krieg modeled tanks, and you want to field them using the standard guard list rather than the Death Corps list, you can do that. Because it's the right tank, it looks the right, it's armed the right way, it's still WYSIWYG, that's fine. Weapons, armor, options, and chosen upgrades from the army list must be shown on the models in a unit. You may use converted models to represent troop types that are not yet available. WYSIWYG is required. While we would prefer the majority of models used in an army be Games Workshop models, models from other companies that clearly represent entries from the relevant codex may be used so long as they are the right size and shape with the correct weapons and war gear visible, but must be checked by a judge first. All models required for summoning or similar abilities must conform to the above requirements. Any models not conforming to the restrictions will be asked to be removed from play. So, what does that mean? It basically means what we've already heard, in that when you're converting a model, we expect them to be modeled appropriately with the right weapons.
It needs to look like what you say.
And need to look like what you say it is, yeah. In a nutshell, that's the sum total of that.
Mm.
Where it gets hairy is...
you have to bring up a difficulty.
Of course. When we go from old models to new models, for example.
Yeah.
I've got three different avatars for my Eldar. I've got one from 1990, somewhere in that space. He's an inch and a half tall on a 25mm base.
Mm-hmm.
Not long after that, second edition 40K dropped, and they gave us an avatar of Kane on a 40mm square base. Mm-hmm. So he's gone from a 25mm round to a 40mm square. Somewhere around third edition, he was repacked with a 40mm round,
yep,
which I have one of on that base as well.
Mm-hmm.
Then they've given us the Forgeboard versions, which are on 60mm rounds, but are bigger again.
Mm.
And I think the Forgeboard ones are discontinued now, and I think the current one still comes on a 40mm round.
Yeah.
Because Games Workshop doesn't ever say what base the avatar should be on, I can use any of the five I own, in theory, despite the oddities and their base sizes. And then you start getting questions of, okay, well, the Forgeable one only fits on a 60. Mm. He will not fit on a 40. And it's a cool model, and I want to use it, and it's awesome. It gains me no benefit to use the different model. Because it's got one shooting attack that's a 12-inch range, and the model is 5 inches tall instead of two and a half. So line of sight's not a factor. You can't target it because it's an independent character. Most of the rules don't change, other than the aura it generates on its base, which we've already covered.
Mm.
So, what base does it go on? Does it go on a 60mm, because that's what it came with? Should I rebase it and try and get it on a 40mm with some weird scenery stuff to make it so it's measured correctly? Or can I then use my 25mm based avatar, because he's teeny tiny and can hide from line of sight really well.
On a 60mm base.
On a 60mm base.
Yeah.
You start getting...
Okay, that one I'd say a flat no.
No. It's funny, so would I.
Yeah.
If I put him on a 40mm base and made him tall to match the current standard fine cast
one, I'd be fine with that.
Then I'd be okay with it.
Yeah.
He'd look weird.
Which goes back to, I guess, what I was alluding to before, in that we do talk about the silhouettes.
Yeah.
So I guess the first thing is the model needs to look like what it is. But I guess with that, there are size differences. So I wouldn't want anybody bringing an epic model or a Titanicus model to a 40K event, because we can clearly see that it's a Space Marine.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that one's a teeny tiny one and that one's really big.
Yeah.
So it has to look like what it says it is, but it also has to match a silhouette at some point in history.
Well, the weird thing is, so I'll give you an example. When they released the Greater Demon of Change, the Zench Greater Demon, the Lord of Change originally had been a fine cast, and prior to that, a metal sculpt on a 60mm base. And he was, I don't know, 2.5 or 3 inches tall.
I like that you hold your fingers up.
I try and gauge it. It's 2.5 inches tall. When they re-released him in plastic, he went to, I think it's 100mm round from a 60mm round.
A significant base size.
And the model is friggin' huge.
Yeah.
Like, he's now 6+ inches tall, yeah, once you look at him. I know players who went out of their way to eBay to buy the old versions so that they kept the small base size and the small silhouette, because he doesn't need line of sight to do what he does. So I know players who deliberately went out of their way to go and buy the old model to then take it to events to go, it's the correct model on the correct size base that it came with. It's this model. You can't stop me using it.
Yeah.
And as an organizer, I say, yeah, I can, because it's my event.
Yes, but you wouldn't stop somebody who's had that for 20 years bringing it, would you?
Well, okay, to put the comparison point, one of our good friends, Brad, has that particular miniature.
Mm.
The first thing he did when they released that plastic one was went, cool, that's now a Demon Prince. Because the Demon Prince is on a 60mm round base that's roughly that size and shape with wings and da-da-da-da-da. So he literally took that model and went, it's Demon Prince now, because it doesn't conform to the current model's size and shape.
This is where we get a little bit tricky, and I don't like going down this rabbit hole because.
Well, that's it. We're requiring you to buy models at that point.
And that's not okay. And, you know, for some people who are getting into the hobby, or perhaps have been part of the hobby for a long time, they don't have the financial capacity to be able to go out and buy all new models because Games Workshop has decided to change the total size, shape and silhouette of the model.
But see, the thing for me is that if you've... I've had this conversation with a few people on a different tangent, but it replies to this as well. If I buy a model in 1990, like I have, and before, at what point is the lifespan of that model up?
Well, I don't think it should ever be up.
Why? Because everything we buy in our lives has a limited lifespan.
Well, didn't necessarily used to. But why should it have an end date? Isn't that the whole point? That if you make, like, this is part of how people sell it to their significant others.
Yeah.
I make this investment now. I never have to buy anything else because I'm set for however long.
Yeah.
Why should you have to get rid of it?
But is there a point where it becomes an acceptable time to upgrade? Like, you use a car, for example, 10 years is about the lifespan of a car. Mm. A computer, 3 years. A mobile phone, 2 at best. Like, at what point do you go, you know what? I've had these models for 10 years. They've re-released a new version of them. I either need to rebase my current ones or buy the new ones. At what point is that an acceptable time frame? Because what we're talking about is if you replace your mobile phone every 2 years here in Australia, you're up for $1,000.
Yep.
For a decent phone. Every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if I spend $1,000 on miniatures, 2 years later, should I be thinking about I need to replace them? Or is 5 years a more acceptable number or 10 years a more acceptable number?
Well, I don't know that any year is a more acceptable number. I think we live in a disposable society. And for something like a model, I actually don't think that you should ever have to replace it. Well, if that model is still in play, you should be able to use it.
I was going
to
say, I've got plenty of models that I can't use anymore because they're no longer supported.
But you could still use them. You can't use them in competitive play.
I'd have to have a friend or someone go, yeah, you can use them with these rules that we made up.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm hinting at is when you go to organized play, like the take the index books at the moment where there's a big brouhaha where, you know, are they legal? Are they not legal? You can't buy them anymore, but the flowchart still exists.
And I get what you're saying.
Like Games Workshop's never going to come out and say, you can't use your old models or you can't use your old indexes. They're never going to do that.
No.
They're just going to put things out of print so that you can't use them in match play anymore. But if you already own them, then that's fine because you've still got the rules, you've still got the models, you can still play with them with your mates. It's just that you can't buy them anymore. So I suppose the point I'm getting at, though, is if you've had that demon for... like, that model's been out since 4th edition? If you've been playing since 4th or 5th edition and you've had that model now for 10-plus years and they release a new plastic kit and the game changes so that if you come into a tournament, the organizer says you have to have the current size and shape on the correct size base, then in my head it's kind of, well, that's the way it has to be. Because that creates a standard playing field. Because otherwise you get stupid situations where you get people going out looking for the Rogue Trader avatar from 1989 because he's an avatar on a 25mm base. There's no...
Look, I hear what you're saying.
Stopping point to that insanity.
It doesn't feel right to me that we tell people that they can't use either their older models or if they're getting into it and they've bought a whole heap of stuff secondhand, that they can't use the secondhand models.
One of the boys from the Toy Soldier Cartel, Travis, finally got around to painting his Greater Demon of Slaanesh, the Keeper of Secrets, and then they previewed the plastic one that weekend. So it's never actually... he's had it years, but it's never been on the table as a Keeper of Secrets, and now it can't be because the new one came out. And
That doesn't feel okay.
Why? Because he's just painted it? I'm sure he's used it prior to that, but obviously we require painting for our events. So, you know, he finally got around to painting it. Not that he actually needed to paint it. He wanted to paint it. He wasn't painting it for an event or anything, to my knowledge. So why is it not okay for him?
It just doesn't feel okay.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah. As I said, it doesn't feel okay that the models have changed that significantly to that you can no longer use the previous ones.
But in the timeline of that model's life...
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I've got the original Keeper of Secrets... Mm-hmm. The knee-licking cow bull monster thing.
Sure.
That sits that came on a 40mm square that is, again, about 2 inches tall. Then they replaced him with a 60mm round in about fourth edition, which is the one I'm talking about with Travis. And then 10 plus years later, they gave us a new plastic. So it's not like that model, it's not like they changed it year to year or even 2 years to 2 years. Like it's in terms of that model's lifespan for the production of the molds and replacing of molds. At what point is it, you kind of go, okay, well, that model's been around 10 plus years.
What do you think? What is acceptable?
So I've got my Rogue Trader Aspect Warriors are still being used to this day because they've updated the models, but I've still got old ones that go back all the way to the early 90s, 1992, I think they are. Would I ever use my Rogue Trader Avatar? No, because he's past the point of no return.
But what is the acceptable lifespan?
For tournament play, whatever's current. If you're coming to an event, in my opinion, and you want to run your Terminators that are from 1990 and they're the metal Deathwing ones with the feathers that I'm sure I used to have but I can't find. I'm assuming I sold them at some point. The very least you should be doing is either rebasing them to 40mm bases or putting the base expanders on them to make sure that they're... Because they're still Terminators. They're a little bit short, but not short enough that it's going to change the game.
And did you do that when you took the really old models down to the Crags event?
When? Which army are you talking about?
Darn, I was really hoping you'd just remember.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, you had... Did you have 30 of them and you...
Oh, the stealth suits?
But I was thinking Beetles.
No.
But I know that there isn't a Beetle.
No. The Tau stealth suits are all XV-15s. They were all rebased to 32mm bases, which is
Did you have three different types of them, but they were all the same?
Yeah.
Okay.
Three squads of six. And they were all rebased to 32s because that's what the current kit comes with.
Okay.
Which was a pain in the butt because they were slaughter bases and they were metal models, so I had to pin them. But, yeah, I did rebase them. So, I mean, I've
just
got...
Just wondered if you actually practice what you preach.
Yeah. I've got a whole bunch of... my Dark Angels army from 2003 is on 25mm bases at the moment. I'm not willing to rip them off those bases. Or my Emperor's Children from 2008 that was my passion project for 2 years, my Purple Space Marines, that I spent drilling holes into shoulder pads and legs to make Mark V armor, and then they released Forge World kits around like 6 months after.
I'm sure it wasn't stealth suits. I'm sure it was some kind of bug.
They're all on 25mm bases as well. If I were ever going to take them to a tournament, I'd have to go and get base extenders to make them 32s. I'm not tearing them off the bases because they're all on sculpted bases.
Yeah.
But I'll put them on the correct radius of base.
And I guess base extenders are available. It's just if you've got something that's on a 32 that you have to take down to a 25.
I can't think of any scenario where that's happened.
Well, no, because with the model creep, like size creep, everything's got bigger.
Yeah,
so I don't know of anything that's gone down significantly smaller to have a smaller base.
No, I don't think anything's actually gone down. But there's things like the entire Space Marine range, except for the Scouts, have moved to 32s as a minimum, but Scouts are still on 25s. And we had a player that wanted to put them on 32s because the feet overhang on the 25s. Yeah. They always have done.
Yeah.
And then you have to go, well, they're used deliberately for screening. They're used to stop people using tactical reserves to land and whatnot. Yeah. So by putting them on 32s, you actually gain over five models, as stupid as it sounds.
Yeah, no, it does.
That's 35 mils, which is an extra 2 inches or 2.5 inches of board area that they control, which actually significantly changes the area that they affect.
For Aura, one of the things that I guess that I came up with as a way to combat the fact that you've got a bigger model going on a bigger base is to actually kind of paint something that is the right size, and then after that point you actually paint it to look like that's part of the aura, so you can actually say, well, that's where I need to measure to and from, and doing it that way. But I know, sorry, that's
well, I was talking
a different tangent.
Well, I was actually talking to one of our judo staff here in WA, Mitch, about a demon prince he wanted to do, and I've seen the conversion where it's an amazing conversion, which he wanted to try and replicate, but it's on a 100mm round base, and the demon prince traditionally goes on a 60. And I suggested to him, why don't you paint a summoning circle ritual in the middle of the base and to represent the 60mm base. So you're measuring everything from that other, like for his aura, you're measuring from that.
Yeah.
To which his response was, well, the base has gone up 40mm, which means it's 20mm radius.
Yeah.
Can I just knock an inch off the radius of his spells, of his aura, which is exactly what we're talking about, and make it a 5 inch instead of a 6? I went, well, that... You know, that actually works. But having that conversation with your organizer is probably the best way to resolve those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with any of the conversions that you do. So if you're going to convert your own Eversor Assassin from a bunch of other random kits, and I've seen them done with Dark Elder Witches and all sorts of things, as a general rule, we say as long as it's ideally easy for your opponent to represent and is modeled with the right weapons and war gear, then conversion's fine. I had a conversation this morning with someone asking me, can they use the Forge World Leman Russ Conqueror rules with a standard Leman Russ? And I had to tell the player no.
Mm.
And they said, well, what about if I put a pintle-mounted Stormbolter on the top of it? Because it has a Stormbolter as part of its war gear. I said, No, because the rules say it's a coaxial Stormbolter, which means it's mounted in parallel with the main turret, which gives it a benefit.
Okay.
So any Leman Russ can have a pintle-mounted Stormbolter, but a Conqueror has a coaxial Stormbolter, and that's a different thing. His response was, you can't buy the kit from Forgewood anymore.
Mm.
I said, cool. It's a two-second cut
conversion,
job. Like, it's actually a relatively easy one for the tank in question. So that's, if you're going to use a Conqueror, I expect it to look like a Conqueror.
Yeah. Which goes back to exactly, you know, right back to the beginning. For me, it really is as simple as that line that's in the X-Wing Players Pack, which you don't have up on the screen anymore, so I can't read. But that, it just really feels that easy, that it just needs to look like what you're saying it is. And you can't do something to make it look like it's not that anymore.
So the line you're talking about is, they cannot modify the ship model in any way that would create confusion about which ship the model represents.
So you can't, basically there cannot be any instance where there's confusion about which model the model represents.
Yeah.
I think really, as far as conversion goes, for me, that's what it's about.
Yeah. Look, it gets really grey with some of the things like Age of Sigmar and 40K, where the model range is, and the selection of armies is monolithic. I mean, when you talk about X-Wing, for example, there's three factions and probably two dozen ships a faction, if that.
Mm.
You talk about, use the Space Marine range as an example. The standard Space Marine range has 100 and something entries in its codex for one of 24, I think it is, factions. So the scale you're talking about is, for X-Wing, it works really well. For 40K, it's a, you know, it's a mouse and an elephant scenario. You've got so many more variables and variations, and because the range that you're using in any game is significantly larger as well.
And that's when I guess it comes down to that's when you need to let your opponent know that this particular conversion is representative of this model.
Yeah.
And what I'm thinking about, since you mentioned AOS, is the we had a player contact us before show. And actually contacted us to say, oh, my army isn't fully painted. Is this okay? And it was absolutely beautiful. It just wasn't fully painted to his standard.
He wasn't finished with it, yeah.
It's well beyond battle ready or tabletop ready. But he was using dinosaurs.
Oh, you're talking about Bailey's.
I wasn't going to say his name, but yes, I am.
It was all Carnosaurs. So they're all GW models.
Mm. Are they?
Yeah, those are Carnosaurs, and the Forge World, the big one, is from Forge World.
Okay.
But they are all Games Workshop models.
Right, I didn't think they were Games Workshop models.
No, they are all Games Workshop models.
Yeah.
Cool looking army.
Yeah, very much.
I was just going to try and find one of the questions we did get, but I can't see it immediately. So
it's too hard to get to.
Yeah. But yeah, I think as a rule for us at least, and I think most organisers fall into a similar boat, if you're converting a model and you keep it roughly the same size and shape as the current model, on the same size base as the current model,
with the right weapons.
Keeping it what you see is what you get, or WYSIWYG.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to explain that to my 12-year-old son was hilarious. I made a comment about WYSIWYG, and he went, what's that? What you see is what you get. Do you have to tell me that? Well, yes. That's dumb. Okay, fair enough. As long as you keep the model looking like it, you know, what you're trying to make it represent, then you should be fine.
Yeah. And we do often have, weapons are something that we do often have. I want to use this model as such and such. Well, have you changed the weapons to match what it's, oh no, I haven't. Well then you can't use it as that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A big one is Demon Princes with Malefic Talons, because the kit you buy does come with two open hands for talons, but it also comes with an axe and a sword, and both are options.
Yeah.
And you can buy a talon and an axe, or a talon and a sword, and it does change the way the game plays. So people go, oh, I'm just going to use it as two talons.
Yeah.
Well, no, because
And it's all well and good saying, but I'll tell my opponent. Your opponent shouldn't have to remember that.
No, the whole point of organised play is that everyone's got the same playing field, and yeah. WYSIWYG is there because it's meant to make the game faster and easier, because yeah. you can look at something and go, cool, that's yeah. what I'm dealing with. It's and the reason we don't allow proxies.
2 hours into the fourth game of the day, you can't remember.
Yeah.
Sometimes players can't remember their own name, let alone what other models are supposed to be.
Yeah. So. Look, and there's a whole bunch of conversion kits out there, whether it's from one of the official, like Privateer Press with their Warjack conversion kits, or whether it's spare parts from third-party providers. There are some awesome third-party kits out there that are available. Ultimately, if you're going to convert a model, it's going to be up to the organisers, yes or no. And it could be something that is as simple as a head swap, that they go, no, we're only having Games Workshop models for this event. Mm. As long as it's all publicised and clear up front,
yeah.
then I don't think there's any argument to be had. It's when you get to the event and someone says you can't use that because it's not correct and there's been no clarification prior to the event. That's, I suppose, where you hit snags. It's one of the reasons why we say if you're going to use third-party stuff, ask. Because if it's a conversion kit, probably it's not an issue. But I know a lot of guys used to use the Puppet Wars Demon Hounds as Flesh Hounds because they look like the dogs from Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
The proper Ghostbusters, the original Ghostbusters. They looked amazing, but they're third-party kits. And I had people come to me and go, hey, these are going on these bases. Can I use them as Flesh Hounds? Absolutely. They're clearly demon dogs on the right size bases. And they're the right size. Go for it.
Because we're not paid or sponsored by Games Workshop to run any of these events. So if we ever got to a point where that was an option, then we'd perhaps have to look at it. And so for some of the events where I've seen in the players pack that third-party models are not okay, I'm assuming it's because they have some official sponsorship for those.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because the four
that I've quoted,
yeah,
X-Wing, Privateer Press's Steamroller, Kill Team and Underworlds, which all had limits,
were all
the officially sponsored ones that we had stuff from.
Yeah, having said that, we are never going to drill someone's model to make sure it's not...
not a recast or something weird.
And things like that. So.
Or do pH tests to try and figure out what paint you used or...
No. Funnily enough, we won't be doing that. We'll just trust people.
So, if you're going to do conversions, our suggestion is keep it simple. If you're going to do something extravagant, bear in mind that it might not necessarily be tournament legal and to seek permission from your organiser prior to the event, before submitting your list.
Passion projects are awesome.
Yeah. Or you might even...
You might not be able to bring it out to play.
Or another suggestion I gave to Mitch before we wrap this up was make a standard Demon Prince.
Yeah,
build and paint
exactly.
a standard Demon Prince. Yeah.
And then if anybody has an issue with it, you can put the standard one on the table.
Yep. Or even with the even if the organiser says no to the fancy one... You can at least put it on the display board.
Yeah.
Because, that's what it should have been. That's the passion project part of the army. But ultimately, the goal here for tournament and organized play has to be consistency for everyone. So
actually, I know we're wrapping up and we really do have to wrap up, but it's an interesting point as far as the display board goes, because I've seen people put extra models on display boards because this is what the whole army looks like.
Yeah.
And I've seen people not put their whole army on display boards because I'm only displaying my best work. And so I kind of think, oh, I'm not sure about that.
But that's fine because you're not marking. We don't mark that. The way our painting system, like the scorecard works, means that it's not relevant.
Well, it is.
No, it's
because
not.
For us, but what about the peer judge painting?
But that's not a painting score so much as a favourite army score.
Yeah, I'm still not sure that you can do favorite army by only showing a certain percentage of your army that's painted to, I've painted these 12 models to this really high standard. The other 12 models are dodgy, so I'm just going to keep those in my case and only represent my army with this.
I think at least at our events, you'd get laughed out of the room. Like, you'd have people going, come on, man. Like, your opponents at the very least would know what's up. I don't think you'd get very far trying that.
I've seen people do that.
I've seen people take them off when they're not complete, and I've seen people take them off when they haven't painted them and they've borrowed them.
Yeah, yep.
But I don't think anyone would try and do it maliciously to try and earn more votes because something looked better. Anyway, we're going to be back to wrap up in just a sec. this is one of our shorter episodes. Mm. I mean, we're going to break an hour, but not by too far. Mm. It's going to be the shortest we've done in a long time. Is that good or bad?
It's good. We've got 29 minutes before we've got to go get the kids from school.
So. We can put it back out there to the listeners as well. Do you prefer the 2 or 3 hour monster episodes, or do you prefer them to be shorter? Let us know.
I think there's people in both camps.
I know, but it's always good to know, like, what the sweet spot is. If we can go, okay, an hour and a half's the number, then that's, you know, we can aim for that.
We could. We aim for an hour and sometimes hit three. So,
well, this is probably going to be close to an hour and a half by the time I finish the intros and everything.
So, what have we got to wrap up with? What's coming up in WA?
So, end of June, we have Crag's Unending Battle Lines 40K event. Mm-hmm. It's 2 weeks away at time of recording. Tickets still available. I put a link up today on the Facebook page, the Obsec Facebook page. So you can go and get tickets if you listen to this week and still want to go and play some 40K. Yep. We've also got Mitch from GW Fremantle running a 40K and AOS event back-to-back in the tail of July. Mm-hmm. Then we hit August 17 and 18 for the 4th annual WATC.
Yes.
Which sold out again. Really, we're 84 players at the moment. We're going to try and squeeze two more teams in against better judgment because we've learned that there was a player who's paid for airfares and then the team didn't buy a ticket. Mm. So he's flying over from Melbourne to play as part of a team and the team didn't get a spot. So we're going to see if we can make that happen. We can't promise it, but we're going to do our best.
Be doable.
The core part of it is a yes, but there's logistics that support having extra tables that we have to figure out.
Yeah, like how we're going to get the extra tables and terrain there.
Yeah, and where that terrain's coming from. Where
we're going to get the terrain from. Yeah.
So there's a few hurdles that we're going to try and work out this week and hopefully be able to give that player some good news rather than flying to Perth for nothing.
I wouldn't be for nothing.
Well, no, apparently he's going to go and watch the online, I think it was Dota finals. It's an online game though, so we could have watched it at home with his mates here in Perth and, you know, same sort of thing. But hopefully we can sort of spot out for them.
Yes.
Then September and October, we'll probably see a slot in mixed doubles and linebreaker.
And an apocalypse event.
Well, it depends. Because I wanted to put the apocalypse in instead of one of those two events, but
I think we should put it in as well as one of those two events.
With apocalypse, the new version of apocalypse dropping at the end of pre-orders end of June, we had announced last night. So
I think we should pop that in for July then. End of July.
Given the book, we'll talk about that off air. then November sees Skulls happen again for Outpost 6030. Mm-hmm. Day one is on the 9th, I think they said it was. And then we have Masters on the 23rd and 24th and Skulls running day two on the 24th as well at a different venue. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the tail end of the year for events, although there is still the Crags Tournament of Champion as well that has to happen, which is normally around that November-December period as well. So, lots of core games happening. We've still got the Blood Bowl League that's happening in Perth. I think there's two more events for the Brawl, for the Blood Bowl.
Yeah, there's Splatter Day and a pun about Sunday as well. I can't remember what that one is. Sorry,
and that's looking at Oz Bowl team selection.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know the War Machine guys have got a couple more events. I know it's happening at Skulls on one of the days. Earl's running War Machine at one of those. We've got the Malifaux 3.0 release that's happening at the end of this month. The second half of the year is going to be busy. There's a lot of games getting refreshed in the second half of the year. There's a lot of expansions in the second half of the year. I think we're up to Wave 4 for X-Wing at the moment as well. So, some exciting games and stuff coming out. All the clubs ramping up again to do some more end of year stuff, and then 2020 here we come.
Mm.
We're actually hoping to have our calendar for 2020 all sorted by the end of July.
Yeah.
To try and get in front of things, and I know that I've been speaking to the club presidents of both the major tabletop clubs in Perth, or at least the fantasy clubs in Perth, I should say, in Outpost and Crags, to try and organise to make sure that we don't have conflicting calendars for 2020.
Yep.
So lots of gaming happening in Perth, which is exciting. I haven't even seen what's happening down in Bunbury. I know Beyond have got other events planned for the second half of the year. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Busy, busy, busy.
Other than that, yeah, Apocalypse around the corner. I'm excited about that. Plastic movement trays. Clear ones. They're doing clear acrylic ones from the looks of them. They were all previewed last night. I saw someone having a complaint that there were no Drakari box sets. They've they always do it. They do a big box for Apocalypse where it's like an army in a box.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of $300-ish. And these are actually going to have discounts from the looks of the pricing structure, which is interesting.
Unheard of.
Not unheard of, but
no, not unheard
rare.
Of. Unusual, I should have said.
But there's only 10, the top 10 factions are getting the box. Mm. And of course, Drakkari isn't one of those. So it's, oh, Games Workshop doesn't love us anymore and all the rest of it. And you go, well, they're not the best-selling army.
Mm.
Like,
it's a business.
You know, it's some, you know. And then when someone actually said that, the response was, oh, that's because they're not hobbyists. They don't care about the hobby. They just care about their shareholders. And you go, well, the business component cares about the shareholders, but the guys who write the rules and make the models and paint the miniatures, I guarantee, are all hobbyists.
Yeah.
And talking to guys like Dom when we met him in Brisbane, he was saying that, like, even the IT guys, like, they might not be what we would consider full-on hobbyists, but they still
play. Still part of the hobby community.
They still do bits and pieces. So it's a bit hard to be part of the company and not be a hobbyist, I think. It'd be a very rare person who manages to not have it integrate into their life in some way.
Mm.
Oh, that's awesome. I wish I got a photo of that. That was great. Anywho, we're going to wrap this episode up. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you in a week's time for our Facebook Live. And then, obviously, 2 weeks after you hear this, we'll be back on the...
Back here again. Jibber-jabbering away.
We have to do something for episode 50. That's coming up.
What do you suggest?
I don't know. If you've got any suggestions on what you'd like to hear us talk about in episode 50, if I'd been keeping all... I wish I'd kept all the outtakes. Some of the weird stuff you said when I've... It's great. It's a lot of digging to go through and find all those, though.
Yeah, you can't find it. It's fine.
Maybe starting from episode 50, I'll start a separate folder which has got all the weird little outtakes in it, so we can, for episode 100, we can do something weird.
I think it's fine. We'll just have a cake. How's that?
A cake? A virtual cake?
No, maybe we'll have cake.
Maybe we could do a competition.
It's too hard. I'm tired.
If you're interested in what we can do, if you've got a suggestion for episode 50, let us know. It's a few away. Mm. You know what I am going to do tomorrow?
What?
I'm going to record Bolt Gun.
Oh, my God.
That might be an audio share that goes to our patrons first.
I'm really sorry.
It's so good. Mm. And you were excited by it. You helped me edit it, for crying out loud.
I did, I know.
Oh, before we go and check out Astartes on YouTube. I'm not affiliated with it in any way, but it is the single best depiction of Space Marines in combat by a fan I've ever seen. And it's better than a lot of the studios would do as well. It's amazing animation. It's part four. They're 2 minutes apart. So we've only got 8 minutes of total footage. But oh my God, if you haven't checked it out, I'll put a link in the show notes for this, because episode four is pretty bonkers. I really enjoyed it. And it was a pleasant surprise over the weekend to find and watch repeatedly, going, oh, that's cool. Because even like, anyway, watch it and look at all the little details. There's some really... the attention to detail is amazing. Anyhow.
Awesome.
You're not that excited by it, I can see.
I'm not. Well, perhaps I was more excited about it the first time you told me.
Yeah.
But this is not the first time
that
I've heard about it. So my excitement has waned, whereas yours has grown.
No, it's so good. I'll put it on in a minute. I'll show you again.
But that's okay. I'm probably okay.
Okay. We will catch you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Happy gaming.
You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.